And we're back for another episode of Standpoint. I'm Gabe Groisman, and I'm honored today to have with me Talia Khan. Talia is an MIT graduate student. I met Talia a few months ago when the encampments and the drama and the anti-Semitism began in earnest at MIT. It's something that's been brewing for many years. I've been glad to speak to her and watch her actually blossom into a huge advocate for peace and normality and normalcy on the MIT campus, testifying in Congress. You've seen her on Fox News, on all these different networks. But before welcome first, Talia, to the show. I'm really happy you're here. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
I know you have finals coming up in a couple weeks, and that's just the reality of being a student in America at an American university these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my exams are in about 2 weeks, so. Grinding for sure.
but here we are. So just to take a step back for a second, and the viewers and listeners know, everybody's been seeing it's on the cover of every newspaper and every news nightly news story, the anti-Semitism on college campuses. This is something that I've been following for many years. It's been brewing across campuses. It's not just about anti-Israelism. It's also anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism. It's really this. The product of intersectionality and wokeism, where they take the lowest common denominator of every group and say, hey, let's all stand together against the oppressor, the big oppressor, white versus black, rich versus poor, strong versus weak. Of course, that framework that they put out isn't even intellectually honest at any point. If you just zoom in to Israel, for example, 55% of Israelis are of Middle Eastern descent, Mizrahi or Sephardic Jews. But those kind of things don't really matter to the masses. And we've seen also the result of an emptiness in our society where students, young people all over our country are just rushing to any cause, the cause of the day. And when you're talking about attacking Jews, that's always been an easy target, generation after generation. And we've seen the masses not just march for Palestinians, that would be pretty easy, but against Jews. They're marching and chanting for the genocide of Jews across campuses. And we see it day in and day out, and it's a coordinated effort. It's not an accident that you see the same things happening on college campuses all over the country, exactly on the same day, all over college campuses around the country. These are coordinated efforts that are well-funded. Reports are coming out day in and day out as to who's funding it, how it's being coordinated. But really, I was surprised, Talia, when we spoke the first time, that a university like MIT would be involved in this at all. I've been to MIT many times over the years, but really the last time was maybe 20 years ago. And you went there and it was a bunch of engineering students, not very political, a lot of foreign students, lots of Asian students, and people were pretty focused on just passing their classes. It's MIT. So tell me a little bit about what MIT is like today.
Yeah, so again, thank you so much for having me and for talking about such an important topic. Today, MIT, I think it's definitely different than the other schools because, again, you're right, it is a science and technology institution, and the vast majority of people on campus, I think, don't want anything to do with this, or even some of them don't even know what's going on somehow. But there is a large minority of students who are incredibly politically active. And what we are seeing here is that, at least, so I'm a graduate student, and on the graduate student side, it's coming out of the Graduate Student Union. Them and the anti-Israel group are one and the same. And then in the undergrads, it's coming out of the more progressive leaning circles and clubs. And they've created this coalition for Palestine amongst all of them. And yeah, as you said, this group has been following, you know, every tactic that we've seen on all campuses. So immediately after October 7th, we saw a letter sent out to all of MIT expressing that Israel was completely at fault for October 7th and they didn't feel bad. And then they put out pictures and posters with Hamas terrorists on top of Israeli tanks saying, "We are the resistance." And those now infamous images of the Hamas fighters parachuting in. And these kinds of, you know, that was immediately after October 7th, a bunch of, you know, propaganda was spread on posters across campus, emails across campus. And then, you know, going on, class interruptions, screaming in the hallways, drum banging. And then finally, like, really some violent rhetoric and just complete ostracization of Jewish people and Zionists, you know, even non-Jewish Zionists from, you know, their communities. So, for example, I have a trans friend, and she is in, you know, a very progressive circle, and she's Jewish. And so immediately after October 7th, she found that everybody around her was, you know, doing BDS, was, you know, shaming Israelis and shaming Zionists and like saying derogatory things about us. And like, she felt so uncomfortable in her immediate community that, you know, she's had to leave, she's had to move out of her living situation. There are students on MIT campus who were in MIT dorms that were being bullied so much for being Jewish. And also there are even some non-Jewish Zionists who were bullied so much for their positions by the people in their dorms that MIT is currently paying for them to live in safe housing away from these bullies. So instead of moving out the bullies or reprimanding the bullies, they just move the Jews, and they just move the Jew supporters. So what we're seeing is administrations acknowledging that there is a very serious problem that is literally making people not only ostracized from study groups and from departmental lounges, but also even from their dorms and where they live and where they, you know, have a community with other people. And instead of punishing the bullies, MIT is punishing the victims. And I think we're seeing that at a lot of campuses where these institutions are unwilling to equally apply their rules on all groups and individuals. They're afraid to enforce their rules on this group. So they're letting them continually break the rules, and these people are just emboldened because they do everything with impunity here. They know that they say on their Instagram, they have lives and things. They say, we run the school, admin doesn't run the school, we control this. We're in control of the situation, not admin. And it's true, I believe them. I really do believe them, because admin is completely weak and unwilling to enforce their rules. And now we have squatters on the lawn, right? You know, about 100 yards that way from me.
Yeah, so let's unpack it a little bit. I mean, it's a crazy situation. People have seen the images where, you know, there's now a debate on whether this is a First Amendment issue, how it's actually affecting people's lives. When you're talking about bullying or intimidating or harassing, that's something that crosses the line on the First Amendment. It's not an absolute right, although people like to think it is. All rights have some sort of limitations, including the First Amendment, well-established ones that people are familiar with, the most famous of which is you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater, but you also can't incite violence or harass or intimidate. Even assault can be done with words in most states. So battery is when you hit somebody. Assault is when you're threatening to hit someone with a credible threat. So what have you seen as far as crossing the line from just sort of unsavory words that people were saying to, in your mind, crossing the line?
So, I mean, aside from the popular anti-Semitic chants, from water to water, Palestine will be Arab, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, etc. We've had students say that we must fight for the resistance and hold a knife to their throats to achieve their goals. We've had people very openly praising Hamas, very openly praising the PFLP, very openly praising the Muslim Brotherhood, and saying that they should shed their blood and become martyrs for the cause and support the martyrs from the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and PFLP, who have already shed their blood for the cause.
Generally, are these students that are saying those from where you're sitting, do you see them? Are they foreign students or are they American students?
So I will also add that it's not just students. So I think the biggest threat to safety is the fact that outsiders, seemingly professional protesters, are being bussed in. So, you know, we had like hundreds of people on campus a few days ago that were bussed in to professionally protest. And I think that, I will say that I think the majority of the MIT students, I don't think that they would hurt me. There are certainly some who I actually do think would, if given the opportunity, However, I think that the real threat for physical violence comes from these outside members who are not part of our MIT community, who are being invited by all of the protesters. So like when people say from MIT's campus, we need to hold a knife to their throats and sacrifice everything for Palestine. When you have these crazy random people being invited to campus, I'm not sure that they don't have a knife and that they won't like attack me because I have, you know, a pin on my backpack that has an Israeli and American flag on it. I think that it comes from a lot of places. There's definitely, you know, foreign students, American students, and people from all walks of life participating in these events.
What was your experience like on Capitol Hill? You were invited to testify in Congress. Was it once or twice? I think I saw you.
Yeah, so the first time I went was when MIT's president Corn Bluth was testifying along with the presidents of UPenn and Harvard. And I submitted written testimony for that. And I spoke at a press conference. The second time that I went back was with a student congressional hearing. And that's when I submitted oral testimony as well.
And what was that experience like?
So both of them were definitely kind of once in a lifetime. It felt very historical, but also I was like, this is tragic. It's tragic that I have to be here right now. Really just begging for a very basic thing, which is what I, you know, when I came to MIT, I've been at MIT for 8 years now. I started undergrad in 2016 here and now I'm in grad school. And when I came here, it never crossed my mind that I would have to be concerned about administration not enforcing rules. And that I would have to see my university president unsure of what to say when asked, is calling for the genocide of Jews harassment according to the MIT Code of Conduct? The now, you know, infamous question. So I think mostly I was just disappointed that I had to be there. Of course, very grateful to all of the Congress people who made it happen and who are really fighting for us and putting pressure on administrations. It has been very kind of morale boosting, I think, for all of the students to know that we have people in power on our side, I guess, because right now it just feels like we're like a bunch of little kids screaming upwards to our administration and they're not listening and they're gaslighting and they're lying to us repeatedly, or they just stopped responding to our emails. We feel very powerless. So I guess having a confirmation that we're being listened to was really helpful and motivating for us to continue and have confidence that, like, no, we can make a difference and we can ensure that Jews are safe on campuses. And this isn't like an unwinnable fight. It was definitely a very special experience for sure.
That's amazing. Look, from my perspective, government isn't the solution to all our problems and certainly won't solve the rage of anti-Semitism in our country from one day to the next. Even if Trump wins, things will certainly get better, but it's still going to continue. These people aren't going to suddenly go back to work or go back to not being anti-Semites, because once you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, or whichever expression you choose. But, you know, in Congress, it's great. The hearings are great. Virginia Fox and Stefanik and that whole committee has been doing a good job in shedding a light, but we're still waiting. There's some, just for the listeners to know, there are some bills that are floating around about defunding identifying foreign funding in American universities, so we can at least get a look at the influence that it's having at the professor level, especially, and also with students. And then also there's efforts to defund universities that don't protect students under Title VI, whether it's Jewish students or otherwise. In the state of Florida, what's interesting is when we passed an anti-Semitism act 2 years ago, it was passed again this year with some slight differences. Governor DeSantis did something interesting where he said, here's the definition of anti-Semitism, and colleges and universities in Florida, you could set whatever policy you want, but however you treat racism is how you have to treat anti-Semitism. And we know, like, if you're looking at MIT campus, if the same people were camping in the middle of the campus, and it would be horrendous, but if they were there calling for the murder of blacks on campus, they wouldn't be there for more than 12 hours, right? They'd be kicked off the campus, rightfully so, not weeks and weeks and weeks of this game where they're allowing them to do it. They're giving them all the support that they need to continue to be there. Like you're saying, they're allowing people from the outside to be bused onto campus, and even their own faculty is participating. Mm-hmm. So that's really something when we're talking about it. I hate talking about fairness, but when we're talking about funding, the federal government is funding these universities, and we shouldn't be, because if the federal government's funding, that means all of us are funding these universities.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think you mentioned one point that's been like really frustrating is seeing the faculty who are part of this. And I know, for example, one of my Israeli friends and another Jewish non-Israeli friend are in the lab of a professor who practically lives in the encampment. And it's really become a very stressful situation for them because they're reliant on this professor for, you know, thesis approval and everything related to their PhD. And they know that this professor believes that, you know, their Israeli family could be rightfully killed by Hamas or any of these other groups. And that's really, you know, just a completely ridiculous situation to put a student in. And MIT should not be allowing professors to be espousing and joining students who are espousing rhetoric like this.
Yeah. And what's the administration been doing?
Literally nothing. Like, they've just been freaking out and being like, oh, we don't know what to do. We're trying to find a solution that will be good for everybody. And in the past almost 7 months, literally nothing has been done. I mean, even we just saw they had this 2:30 p.m. deadline. You have to get out of the encampment or you'll be suspended. And people immediately violated it. They just had a huge, like, crazy protest where they, again, bust people in. And then they like shoved down the fences that MIT put in and formed a human chain and said, no, we're not leaving. And, you know, last night and the day before, and even today, they're playing music and having a little party and making more signs that, like, you know, slander Israel. And even cops, I saw one that said all cops are bastards. So, you know, they're just like doing whatever they want. They're running their own show. And MIT is just doing nothing.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. You have an American flag behind you. In the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing American flags being pulled down and Palestinian flags being put up on college campuses around the country. Israeli flags being defaced with bloody hands, which is a symbol of one of the worst images of a terror attack during the Second Intifada when a Jewish man drove into an Arab neighborhood right outside of Jerusalem, and he was taken into a police station, actually, and disemboweled, literally, and the terrorist reached out the windows with his two bloody red hands, and that was the image of the Second Intifada, and that's really what we're seeing back again. But we do see students putting up Israeli flags and being told to put it down. I heard you've had a similar situation. You want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. And I will say that we had the red hands painted on our Israeli flags yesterday, and it was very scary, as you know, just based on what you were explaining about the history of that symbolism of the red hands and the Second Intifada and what that means for Jewish people.
Yeah, it was incredibly frightening. It's the equivalent at a KKK rally if they put up nooses, right? It's similar.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I guess, yeah, in terms of the flags, so immediately after October 7th, so I have my office as a grad student is right in front of Massachusetts Avenue. It's like the main like road you can drive down this way and get from MIT to Harvard. And I put up in my big windows Israeli flags, signs, and two posters that said, we stand with Israel and no excuse for terror. And within 6 days of my putting these flags up, MIT made a brand new rule. They adjusted the postering policy for the first time in like 15 years to ban large posters and flags. And of course, you know, the first flags and posters that they went for is me. And over the next about week and a half, they sent professors and other administrators to intimidate me into taking down the flags. And I said, if you want me to take down the flag, point to the rule, send it in an email and say, I need you to take down the Israeli flag. And why? And they refused to put it in writing. And finally, one night right before Shabbat, I got a text message that said, quick, go back to your office. I just heard that administration is sending somebody in to take down your flags. So I ran over to my office. This is like a Friday evening alone as a woman. And I set up my Zoom camera to record whatever was going on. And so I waited in my office right here. And these three big men come into my office. And I say, hello, good evening. What are you doing here? FYI, I'm alone and this is being recorded, I told them. And they said, oh, we're just here to send you a message from administration. And I was like, okay, what's it about? And they were like, well, you know what it's about. It's about the flags. And I said, are you going to take them down? You know, what are you guys all doing here? And they said, well, we're not going to take them down. I said to somebody else, well, you never know. You know what? You never know what can happen. They might not be there tomorrow. And I said, so if I sleep here tonight, what's going to happen? Is somebody going to come in here into my personal space and take down my personal property in my office? And I told them, I was like, I have the Zoom camera recorded and it will stay recording for the next 36 hours. And they were like, well, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you can go back to admin and tell them if they want me to take down my flags, they can put it in writing and I will send it to a lawyer. And of course, MIT refused to put it in writing. So eventually what happened is that in trying to work with the admin and, you know, falsely believing that if I worked with the admin, that they would work with us and kind of start enforcing rules, I, of my own volition, took down the flag and the posters. And eventually, once I realized that my following the rules wasn't going to make a difference in their ability or willingness to enforce the rules on others, I decided to put it back up. So now I have, right there, it's like a half American flag, half Israeli flag, a sign that says Jews are indigenous to Israel. And then I have a huge map the size of like, I don't know, maybe 4 feet high and 2.5 feet wide of the map of Israel and the logo of the IDF kind of like encircling the map of Israel. And I have, of course, gotten many requests only, you know, indirectly through faculty because they don't want to write anything down. I've gotten many requests to take all of this down, especially the map. But if there are like 100 Palestinian flags, 100 of these, all these other flags, there's no reason that I should be required to take my display down. And they're allowed to have an encampment in the middle of MIT, in the middle of the dorms, right next to the gym, right next to the theater, right next to Hillel, right next to the chapel, and right next to the student center for over a week.
Right. And even flags of terror organizations we've seen MIT
there
and other
PFLP.
Campuses.
Yeah, we've had PFLP logos everywhere. So.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So listen, the encampments are the groups at the encampments in different schools have all these ridiculous demands from their universities. I'm not interested in going through the MIT encampments demands, but what would you and the Jewish students on the campus like to see from the university?
All we want is rules to be equally enforced on all groups and individuals. So you cannot tell me to take down my flag and then let them have their encampment up for however long they want or whatever it is. You can't let them continue to interrupt classes and have unauthorized protests and then get mad at us for any little thing. So all we really want is to study again. Like I want to be studying right now. I don't want to have to be, you know, constantly sending emails and begging and going on the news and begging for someone to kind of like push MIT admin to enforce their own rules. We just want normalcy back. We want to be able to study in peace. We want to stop being bullied and like looked at in the hallway and, you know, called like stinky Zionist, called racist, you know, oh, like you're just white. You're just a white Zionist. Like we just get called names in the hallway. It's just like being anti-Semitic and being like actively hostile to anyone who supports Israel or who supports Jews, or it's just become so normalized. And we need to get back to a place where, people can be hateful in their heads. But I want to be able to go to my classes and not be bullied in the hallway. And I think that's important, is that when people talk about free speech, there are a lot of things you can say. But there are, as President Kornbluth has said, there are things that you can say and things that you should say. And there should, there are community standards that should be enforced at MIT. And because MIT is a private institution, it can enforce these community standards. So there are, for example, time, place, manner restrictions on how you can express your First Amendment rights to free speech. So you cannot, in fact, go onto Kresge Lawn, which is where the encampment is. You cannot go there and set up a tent and a mini town and a little tent city whenever you want and scream Intifada Revolution, death to the Zionist state, whenever you want. You cannot do that. People have to study, people have to sleep, and MIT needs these spaces for other community events. One group cannot be totally taking all of the resources from MIT at all times. So it's just been very frustrating. All we want is normalcy back. We just want to live in a peaceful, academically supportive and emotionally supportive environment again, where we're not being bullied all the time. And we don't have to constantly be fighting for our ability to live peacefully.
Talia, what would you say to a high school senior who applied and gets into MIT, a Jewish student? Should they come to MIT or should they not go to MIT?
It's a hard question, and I think it depends on the person. If you don't want to deal with this stuff, go to a school in the South. I'll be honest, it's not easy to deal with. And while I have been kind of the face of this at MIT, every single one of us, my organization, I should have led with this. I'm the graduate student president of the MIT Israel Alliance. And we have about over 300, current members, and then plus more, we have alumni and parents as part of the organization as well, which is well over 450 people. And every single person on this campus is actively stressed about this every day. It's actively working and sending emails and, helping make flyers, helping do events every single day. So it is an extracurricular, being Jewish has become an extracurricular, and fighting for your own safety has become an extracurricular, whether or not you wanted it to be. And I think that's important to know. So if you can handle that, I think it's important for strong people and people who are willing to fight for what's right to come to campus, and no judgment against people who just want to focus on their studies and don't want to have to deal with that and want to go to a school where people don't hate them. Totally fair. I think it just depends on your constitution and what you want to be, focusing your time on.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I agree almost entirely. And I think that students, I don't agree with anybody entirely, not even myself sometimes, but students today, and I have a daughter who's in 11th grade and four more behind her, but the one that's in 11th grade and speaking to her and her friends, it's like, unless you're ready to take it on, don't go to one of these universities. And we need people there to take it on, but also the problem isn't just in the classroom, outside the classrooms, it's in the classrooms. And if you want to, I think the days of Jews studying liberal arts freely all over our country are gone. Mm-hmm. I think if you're going to be a liberal arts student, you really have to think of where you're studying.
Absolutely.
And if you're going to if you want to study something technical like engineering or medicine or something specific in that sense, and you got to go to the best school you can go to, but also take into account these realities. But you have, I think you said you have 3 years left of your time at MIT.
Yeah,
so first of all, for all the listeners, that's 11 years. Is that 11 years total there? How many years have you been there?
I guess so. Oh my God.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Making me feel old.
Well, to the rest of us, you're young, so don't worry about it. It just seems like a long time to be there. But how do you see the next 3 years playing out?
Oh boy. I mean, I couldn't have ever guessed this year would play out how it did. I mean, I hope that next year it doesn't, all of this nonsense doesn't take over my life and I am able to continue working on my PhD, which is why I'm here. I don't know how hopeful I am. I don't think there's like a way to know. It kind of feels like how we thought that COVID at the very beginning, like in, I don't know, April or something, we were like, we'll like lock down or whatever for like 2 more weeks, it'll be done. And then it just like kept going and you're like, just like 2 more weeks, it'll be done. And it feels exactly like that, where we're just like, we have no idea when it's gonna end. And it's really hard to know. I think it's kind of become normalized again. So we're getting kind of used to it. And we have like structures in place with how to deal with this more now. And we have a very strong community that has come together in support, like constantly is supporting each other. So that's obviously amazing. And I hope that we don't need to be persecuted in order to maintain that strong community. I have no idea what the next 3 years are going to look like.
Yeah, I spoke to a student at Columbia recently, and what he was saying, the hardest part for him is, you know, he can deal with it. He's a fighter. He's out there. And but he says, when you see these students, and we're walking through the campus, he says, for you, they're just young people screaming crazy stuff. But I know that guy, and he sits next to me in class, right? Mm-hmm. So when this thing is over.
Yeah, I know a lot of people in the encampment.
Yeah, exactly. So
they don't talk to me anymore.
Right. So next year comes and it's over, and they're now their next encampment, their next protest is about Trump if he wins, you know, or whatever it is that they're going to go on to next. But you still remember them, and you don't forget the things that they said, and you can't just undo that, which I think is the most difficult thing. But what I did want to shift to and maybe end on is, you know, the Jewish community, myself included, have always say, you know, anti-Semitism is a canary in the coal mine, meaning it's the whenever you see anti-Semitism in a society, it's a symbol of a rot in the society. There's a lot more coming to the society. And when people are talking, they're anti-Israel, they're also anti-America, they're anti-American values and Western values. And we've been saying it. And when the Jewish community says it, people roll their eyes like, sure, you're just looking for allies, right? Like, but luckily, I mean, not luckily, all this is unfortunate, but in the past couple of weeks, like we mentioned earlier, we saw American flags being torn down all over, not just in campuses, but on city streets, with Palestinian flags being put up. And then finally, for the first time really since October 7th, since this round of anti-Semitism in our country, we're seeing just red-blooded Americans, non-Jewish Americans, fighting back. I mean, the frat boy revolution has started on college campuses.
Yeah.
Where you see these frat boys coming onto college campuses, onto their encampment, saying, hey, blue-haired people, get out of our way, and we're putting our American flag back up. It reminds me of my days at Michigan. I think that's how we would have handled it if it was happening these days. But America is starting to wake up and realize that this quote unquote pathetic revolution, and I added the pathetic, but I think that's accurate, that these people are trying to start on college campuses and streets is not just against the Jews and it's not just against Israel, it's against the American principles and values and dream that we're all trying to achieve. Yeah. Are you seeing that on your campus at all? Are we getting some American pushback?
Oh yeah, they tear down our American flags every single day. Every single day we have to put them back. And they say, you know, I told you before, they have like an ACAB, like anti-cop stuff. They say death to Israel, death to America. They're like Antifa people. So actually the people who bust a bunch of people in the other day was the Socialist Party in Boston. So, you know, they're very anti-American, very anti-Western values. And then you have people chanting to spread jihad around the world and spread Sharia law, which of course, again, anti-American. They're very open about their opinions. They hate America. They hate, you know, Western values and democracy. There are like a creepy number of people who are like young people on like TikTok and all these other social media platforms who are saying like, oh, you know, like I never thought about like the Palestinian Islamic Jihad before, but like they have some cool stuff going on. And like, it looks like satire. These people are like, oh, the Muslim Brotherhood, not so bad. Like, oh, like Al Qaeda, like maybe they were right. Like what? It's yeah. just super weird to see like young, like white girls or like whatever, just like people from like middle America even just be like totally fangirling Osama bin Laden. That's weird. That's not okay.
Yeah, it's more than weird.
That shows
it's
like a very yeah. like scary lack of understanding of history of, you know, of, I don't know, current events of like geopolitics. It's very scary. And I'm genuinely, like I say this because I'm like I say this while smiling, but like I'm genuinely fearful for the future of this country. If you have so many people like blindly following like sheep these crazy terrorist organizations, and the weirdest part is that they say they're progressive and far left and they're latching onto these crazy far right terrorist organizations that, you know, don't support women's rights, don't support gay rights, don't support, you know, like women can't walk in the street, they can't be educated, they have to cover up, and it's just totally mind-blowing to me. And very, very scary that these people are unable to do basic critical, what to me is basic critical thinking.
Yeah, the situation is untenable. It's untenable for the Jewish students around college campuses, but it's also untenable just for America. I think if you just zoom out a little bit and see the situation around the country, it's really an indictment on American society in the last generation of what we as a society have produced and are producing. And all these college kids in the next few years are going to be working in congressmen's, in congressional offices, in governor's offices, in mayor's offices. And that's really a scary thought. But I am always an optimist, and there are people like you fighting all over the country. So thank you for your time here. Thank you for everything you're doing, Talia. I love watching all the work you're doing, and excited for you in any way I can help at any time. Please feel free to reach out to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.